From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today we go to Moscow to have a conversation with analyst Mark Sloboda. Mark, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you back with us.
Don, thanks for having me. It's always an honor and a pleasure to be on CPR Radio with you.
And it's our honor and pleasure also. So we have an indictment here, another one in the ongoing cleanup of the Russiagate farce, basically. This is a gentleman by the name of Igor Danchenko. Was indicted on the 3rd of November, I think. We found out about it anyway. And he's indicted for lying to the FBI in connection with an investigation known as Crossfire Hurricane to see if Trump and his presidential campaign were coordinating activities with the Russian government. That's the official version. What it seems to have been actually was a bunch of nonsense that was made up in order to enable an FBI investigation, quote-unquote, surveillance of the Trump campaign, one would guess, on behalf of and for the benefit of the Clinton campaign. Now, to me, the remarkable thing actually is that that's all probably true and it didn't work, but that's another matter. Let's talk about the indictment.
Yeah, okay, so there has been an investigation launched into the whole Russiagate affair involving the FBI, the wiretap on Trump, the so-called the dodgy dossier, the Steele dossier as well. And the fallout from that is continuing. This was an investigation launched during the Trump administration. It is the Durham investigation, John Durham, appointed by the Trump admission to scrutinize the Russia investigation for any wrongdoing. And it's just starting to really have its fallout coming now. One of the main targets so far is a so-called Russia analyst, a dissident who has spent a decades in the United States, whom it has emerged is the primary source for the primary research source for the Steele dossier, and for those of you who don't remember what the Steele dossier was. It was quite a piece of work. This is where the alleged stories about Trump in a Russian hotel with prostitutes and the PP tapes and so on.
Right.
And this all emerged in the last 10 days of the 2016 election, 10 days before the election. And although this dossier had actually been farmed to the public, to the journalists, to the media outlets, and no one had touched it because it didn't really, even to the editors of the major newspapers, it didn't pass the smell test, even on just a cursory look. Eventually BuzzFeed ran it in whole right before the election, and it was right after the election. It was 10 days after the Trump inauguration. This dossier, in 2016, the Hillary Clinton campaign paid the legal firm Perkins Coie to dig up dirt about Trump, right? This is opposition research,
right,
if you will. And Perkins Coie lawyer hired Fusion GPS, which is a shady research firm, quote unquote, run by a former Wall Street Journal guy. And Fusion GPS hired the dodgy British private spy company Orbis, all right, to dig up this dirt then.
Right.
And Orbis happened to have working for them one of MI6's a former spy for the British intelligence agency, the Foreign Intelligence Agency, MI6, Christopher Steele, who was the head of their Russia desk, of their Russia operations.
Right.
And he was eventually tasked. You see this long chain of middlemen here between the Clinton campaign and the creation of this dirt. Steele, in turn, hired then this Igor Danchenko, and this is, he was a Russian living in the U.S. He is called an analyst. He's actually not any type of big name analyst. His skill of being an analyst happens to be that he was a Russian liberal oppositionist who had been in the U.S. a long time, but he has worked for Brookings Institute.
Yeah, he was also apparently like a contact to, you know, Steele himself was the Russia desk or the Soviet desk for the last few years of the Soviet Union, and then he was the head of MI6 Russia desk. So, yeah, definitely.
The only problem is Danchenko himself, he had no sources, right? He doesn't have anyone close to the Russian government, anyone willing to talk to him. He's been living in the U.S. for decades. He doesn't know anything. He just, you know, doesn't like the Russian government. But he does know. He had been introduced for and worked for a Clinton, a long-time Democratic Clinton political operative by the name of Chuck Dolan. And Chuck Dolan, he had worked with Bill Clinton. He had worked then for the Hillary Clinton election campaign, and he had been a PR lobbyist. He's various positions within the Democratic Party, advisor to the Clinton campaign in two states, involved in the Kerry campaign, Democratic Party operative.
And right.
Before that, he had been a senior VP at Ketchum, which is one of the world's largest public relations firms, who deals with some of the nastiest and whitewashing the image of some of the dodgiest and nastiest people in the world.
Right.
No questions asked as long as the money is incoming.
Right. The check clear the bank, okay, put it out. Yeah, right.
Yeah. In fact, K Street is often joked, K Street, where the lobbyists are in Washington, that stands for Ketchum Street.
Right.
So Dolan, of course, didn't have any real Russian sources either, but he had had a business trip to Moscow where he had drank with a lot of Russians, who are we assume mostly business people and liberal oppositionists, and he had some booze-filled conversations, and he reported this back to Danchenko, what they came up with while drunk. And Danchenko added some embellishments to it, handed it off to Steele. Steele added some further embellishments to it. And then we finally end up with this dodgy dossier of a completely nonsense, long debunked research. Among other things, it claimed that Putin was using these PP tapes that didn't exist to blackmail Trump into doing whatever he wanted, and that Putin, that there was proof that Putin had ordered this himself officially, and probably, I don't know, maybe he was the one with the camera or dressed up as one of the prostitutes that Trump urinated on, I suppose. I mean, this is a complete fantasy world. And that's the way this dossier has long read. But that didn't stop, once BuzzFeed went with it, it didn't stop the press from running with it. And even more damaging, it didn't stop the FBI, even though now internal documents show they knew it was complete horse fodder.
I mean, that a moron, well, okay, in deference to the FBI, a moron would know that looking at it. It's the craziest nonsense you ever saw. It's so childish, actually.
And sourceless.
That was obvious.
That was obvious even then.
Yeah, right.
But they didn't stop them from using that to issue the wiretap on Trump. Why? Because a lot of these FBI people, the ones involved in the investigation, were really against the idea of Trump becoming president.
Right.
Primarily because they thought it would be extremely damaging to the country and extremely damaging to U.S. foreign policy. Trump had already, you know, well made views, his views on NATO, the idea that he wanted probably the one consistent foreign policy idea he had his entire campaign, for whatever reason, that he wanted to improve relations with Russia and that he didn't hate Putin and so on. So they surely saw themselves as some type of crusaders, yeah, who were doing some dodgy stuff for a good reason of keeping Trump out of office. That was the goal, the original goal. And when Trump, you know, won the election, you know, despite, you know, all these leaks coming out about him, all the insinuations, then the goal was to
cripple him,
right, impeach him,
right,
to provide grounds for impeach him. And if that didn't turn out, that at the very least they could hang this over his head and use it to prevent him from improving relations with Russia and shifting U.S. foreign policy away from, you know, the orthodoxy that it has been under for decades now.
Right. And that's what was done too, by the way. That's exactly what happened.
He
was hamstrung from that moment forward, and this is, as you said, 10 days before he took office.
10 days after he took
office. No, 10 days before. I'm looking at a January 12th article in the Guardian discussing the recently released 35-page document.
Before he was inaugurated.
Yeah.
It was after the election, but before.
Well, let's not quibble. I mean, it was right there.
It was right there.
Really,
And after that, the media ran with it, of course, and it became the dominant. And even today, despite all the debunking, despite, you know, these indictments going out and everything, we're still left with a lot of people swearing by this.
I know.
And
that's true.
That Russiagate is true, that Trump was a Putin punishment, you know, never mind that under Trump, you know, largely because his foreign policy wasn't controlled by himself, because the deal that he made quite obviously with the Senate neocons was they would not support any impeachment against him if he hires all neocons into his administration,
right,
and they actually run his foreign policy.
Right.
And that's quite obviously what happened. Not,
yep, you're right.
Not that Trump had any deep convictions about foreign policy. He had vague ideas of a more transactional U.S. foreign policy, and for whatever reason, he genuinely seems to have some respect for the Russian president on his own. You know, that's a case of a broken clock being right twice a day.
Whatever.
Yeah, and this is absolutely no defense of Trump, by the way. I mean, it's really amazing that they had to create this fanciful stuff to go after him when there are so many, so much real slime and corruption and his many problems with women and harassment and children emerging, you know, out of the woodwork and so on. It's his general idiocy, of course. I mean, but on and on, they had to go with this, and this, you know, really tied in with the Clinton campaign, because Hillary Clinton had a big problem with Russia. Largely since in the early 2000s, Putin started to put the country together.
Right.
And she was one of the many who feared that a Russia that was putting itself back together would be a natural force of regional gravitation again,
right.
It being the most populous, the most economically strong, most military strong, most culturally strong country in Eurasia.
Biggest.
This is what...
Also the biggest.
The biggest, right? Yeah, I mean the simple geography there as well, and energy resources,
right.
and so on. And Putin, you know, by all accounts, was actually managing, you know, to put the country back together from the chaos and the near splintering of the 90s under the Clinton-backed kleptocrat of Boris Yeltsin.
Drunken kleptocrat, while we were talking about people on vodka. Yeah.
So, Hillary Clinton spoke to this, you know, when she saw talk of the Eurasian Union, which is a fairly modest regional group, primarily economic grouping, you know, like ASEAN, like a very early phase of the European Union and so on. She said that's reformation of the Soviet Union, and we can't let that happen. So she wanted U.S. foreign policy to become very hostile towards Russia. And it did. It did. Yeah. It starting in the 2000s with the backing of the Orange and Rose revolutions to put anti-Russian governments in Georgia and Ukraine. The first time, the Orange Revolution, and then there was the 2008 August War with Georgia. Right. It was backed, and then the attempts to the overthrow of the Gaddafi government in Libya, the attempt to regime change Syria with Russia stepping in, and then there was the the biggest of them all, this backing of a putsch in Ukraine in 2014 to overthrow the then democratically elected, however flawed, government of Viktor Yanukovych.
Right.
Leading to the splitting of the country, the ongoing conflict in East Ukraine to subject the Donbass to that seizure of power, Russia reunifying the Crimea, among all of this, Crimea being a very pro-Russian, anti-Kiev section of Ukraine, the peninsula there, right, that happened to host by treaty the main Russian naval bases for that part of the world, right, and led to has led to very bad relations, an economic war of sanctions and everything since. And full disclosure, my wife is Crimean, so I have a little bit of an insight and also a strong personal opinion Clinton had it out for Russia. Another longtime Democratic foreign policy advisor involved with several administrations is Fiona Hill. And Americans actually probably know her better for testifying during the Trump impeachment. Right. But she was the one, evidently, who actually first introduced this Chuck Dolan and Igor Danchenko together.
Uh-huh.
And you start to see where all of these domestic and foreign policy motivations behind the Steele dossier, and then behind the attempt to use this to smear Trump and make sure that U.S. foreign policy was extremely antagonistic to Russia. Fiona Hill is a Russia expert, quote unquote, and extremely antagonistic to the Russian government. So all of these fell in line. Now that they're starting to dig into this and really looking at it and questioning people, who are breaking and documents are emerging, it emerges that that not only was there no credible sources for this Steele dossier by Danchenko, also that he had lied about his sources in repeated statements to the FBI. And of course, that's the thing that the FBI actually gets you on, is when you lie about. That's how they got Flint, Ryan Flint, is when you make even the smallest lie. That's where they really, however innocuous that particular lie will.
Right. Yep. You know, I'm looking at this article that I mentioned before in The Guardian. It's January 12th, 2017. I'm just going to read a paragraph or two out of this, because this is some amazing setup. You know, they released this damn thing. It turns out to be not just a tissue of lies. It's like, you know, all of the space around it is lies also. It's absurd lies. I'm not even going to dignify it by repeating it again. The headline is Trump dossier, intelligence sources vouch for author's credibility. And there's a ex-MI6 officer, Christopher Steele, named as the writer of Trump memo, is, quote, highly regarded professional, closed quote. So then they start with Trump's denials, where Trump said it's a confection of lies. He compared it to Nazi propaganda and fake news spread by sick people. He dared the world's media to scrutinize the 35-page of claims. This is how they're presenting it before throwing down a challenge. Where's the proof? Nobody had any case closed. But in the rush to trample all over the dossier and its contents, one key question remained. This is, in other words, there is no proof. So why had America's intelligence agencies felt it necessary to provide a compendium of the claims to Obama and Trump himself, and that the answer lies in the credibility of the apparent author, talking about Steele, the quality of the sources he has, and the quality of people prepared to vouch for him. In all respects, he's in credit, as they put it in British English. So, in other words, the whole story was about, well, yeah, we don't have any proof here, but everybody says it's true. They don't name any of them here. I hear the former foreign official who has known Steele for 25 years and considers him a friend said, quote, the idea his work is fake or a cowboy operation is false, completely untrue. Chris is an experienced and highly regarded professional, not the sort of person who will simply pass on gossip, close quote. Then they don't name the person. Nobody's calling any of these people to the carpet. That's my point. This is a public relations operation that was conducted by across the board in the media. This is the Guardian, okay? It's supposed to be a somewhat progressive source to take Trump out over foreign policy with respect to Russia because he might not be aggressive enough towards Russia. That's the essence of this whole thing here.
Yeah. But you bring up another important point here, and this is where there, during the whole Trump affair, there was a very clear case of foreign meddling in U.S. domestic political affairs and in the election by the British.
That's right. This guy is a top British MI6 person that's scamming this and using and conspiring with U.S. intelligence people to spy on a political campaign. This is what took Nixon out, as you may remember.
And Steele, I mean, first of all, there's the whole, you know, there never is a former spy. But there's also fact that, you know, it has been reported in the British press many times since. You know, always with anonymous sources, but quite clear that the MI6 was going to bat for Steele and the dossier, even though they had to know as well that it was complete nonsense.
Right.
Why? Because they didn't want Trump to be president in the U.S.
Right.
And they have their own reasons for desiring a very anti-Russian foreign policy, and they didn't want the U.S. to switch away from that. So this is a tale of the British tail wagging the American dog, and it shows that there was foreign meddling involved in the election, but it wasn't so much the Russians or even the very usual Israelis and Saudis.
Right.
This was clear British involvement here.
Yeah.
And, you know, a whole host of Americans, of course, signed on for it. I mean, there was Senator John McCain. You know, now deceased, who was being used to basically peddle this dossier in Washington when it wasn't immediately jumped on.
Yeah, he's on board with that, though. Look at him in Ukraine. He went to Ukraine to, you know, to speak to the troops in the street outside the Maidan. He's one of them. Was one of them.
And when you say troops, you mean the neo-Nazi militants.
That's what I'm talking about.
Who were the vanguard those troops, not the actual Ukrainian troops.
No. I'm talking about the anti-Russian mob that was gathering.
Yeah, yep. Yes. So here, you know, we see the British government affair, and again, you had these people within the FBI who were running that investigation against Trump, and were all too happy, even though it is now quite clear that they were, you know, knew that this dossier wasn't worth the paper it was written on. They used that to justify the wiretap to spy on Trump, to look for more dirt. And of course, they never actually found anything substantial, and they never found any actual evidence of Russian collusion with these wiretaps. In fact, all they revealed was how incompetent the Trump administration in terms of foreign policy contacts actually was.
Right.
And they still tried to blow up that into everything. But now, yep. Now it's all unraveling. Danchenko lied to the FBI, making statements about multiple sources, including Sergey Milian, who was a former president of the Russian-American Chamber of Commerce. He claimed that Danchenko claimed that Milian had been one of his sources for the Steele dossier, and it's now emerged, and Milian has testified that he never actually talked to Danchenko at all, much less about this. So that is what the FBI is investigating him for. But you can be sure that the FBI is going to this special investigation by Durham is going to be putting eventually a lot of FBI people.
Yeah. Look at Watergate.
Former FBI, now former FBI people on the stand, because it's quite clear that they were very partisan in running this. And again, they believed they were doing a right thing because they thought, Trump would be disastrous to the country and everything. But of course, it has nothing to do with democracy, right?
A lot of people believe things when that end up doing time for it, or and sometimes being executed for it. In this case here, what we have in essence is a need by the Clinton campaign and a decision by them to wiretap the Trump campaign. And so looking at the legal example and precedent of Watergate and the political example of it, decide they got to cover their behind. So what do we have to do? We have to get a FISA warrant. What do we need for a FISA warrant? We need probable cause. Where can we get probable cause? Let's ask some of our intelligence people. What can you come up with? This guy comes up with this dossier. It dovetails into the actual concern, if you think about how it's going to play out politically, because what they want more than anything is not to turn down the temperature in relations between the U.S. and Russia, because at some point in time, people are going to want that peace dividend and say, why are we still spending $1 trillion a year on weapons that we're never going to use?
Yep.
And that is a big, scary monster for these people. And it's also a scary monster for the people who are looking at maybe using those as leverage to try to force a regime change in Russia or concessions on oil and gas, et cetera, with these guns pointed like they're positioned to do. And I'm scared of that, because that will be the historic miscalculation that maybe undoes our species.
That's the scary thing about all this.
Yeah.
I don't care about the partisan U.S. politics, and
they're all
and
crooks.
I don't care that Trump was wrong with a wiretap, or how crooked the FBI is, or
just
how
describing
crooked
what happened.
Hillary Clinton
I don't care
is.
Either.
My concern is that this was used specifically. All right, it was a bunch of lies about creating a figment of meddling by the number two military power in the world, the other nuclear armed great power,
right?
And creating a whole host of tensions, using Russia domestically as a political bogeyman for their own domestic political purposes, and thus increasing tensions in a whole host of areas that
and
has
thus
led to so
risking
much
war.
Geopolitical.
That's right.
Risking nuclear war, right?
That's right.
Risking
absolutely.
Nuclear war because Hillary Clinton didn't want Donald Trump to be president, and a bunch of U.S. intelligence agencies didn't want him to improve relations with Russia.
And
if he did, is inexcusable. That is dangerous.
That's crazy, and that's exactly what happened. All right, we're going to have to leave it there, Mark. Thank you very much. We'll speak with you again next week.
Catch you again next week, Don.
Thanks.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.